right, here we go with another edition of the Talking Puck Podcast. Tom Callahan, Mike Haynes here with you. If you like the podcast, please click that follow, like, subscribe button, whatever it is on your platform. We're on almost every platform known to man, and even a few that are just alien exclusive. So if you're listening to us from somewhere outside of Saturn, thank you. We're talking about ice hockey. So Mike and I, getting ready to push forward here, at Callahan On Air in my Twitter bio, you will find a link to our Talking Puck Discord. Jump on the Discord, jump into the conversation. Mike is at BusterTheDog33. And Mike, today's show, we wanted to get into taking a look at trade deadline acquisitions. And this year, some teams are criticized for not doing a thing. The hot properties in the market, Calgary struck, quote-unquote, early, brought in Tyler Toffoli. Then the big names, Marc-Andre Fleury went to Minnesota. Claude Giroux ended up picking Florida. Not that he was dealt there. He picked Florida and turned down a trade to the Avalanche. We kind of see how that worked out. Both Florida's out now. They made it to the second round, swept by Tampa Bay. Minnesota couldn't even get past St. Louis and turned away from Fleury in a pivotal game six and went with Cam Talbot. So the trades don't always work out. And some of the teams, as you mentioned, even before we started taping, Edmonton did zip. And look at where the Oilers are now. So it just goes to show there's so much pressure from fans, from media, from all these different directions, and sometimes even internally, maybe even ownership, on a general manager to make a change. Sometimes it's not warranted, and sometimes you make the change, and it just doesn't. The worst case scenario is it makes your team worse, but sometimes there's just no real impact.
I like what you said. I want to talk a little bit more about that regarding the change. I think in the last 20 years over trade deadline day, and I'll talk about this in a moment. I happen to work with Butch Goring for 4 years. And I'll talk about why that's impactful. But I think what's happened, especially in today's mass media, where you've got multiple sports channels, you know, a lot of radio stations. Now we got podcasts. We got instant notification on social media. Tom, the pressure to do something on trade deadline day, and it's not just trade deadline day now anymore, it's 2 weeks before leading up to trade deadline day, but the pressure and what it means now for teams is so hyped up, it's very difficult to live up to the expectations. First of all, it's very rare that a player of real impact is available and can make a difference. I was fortunate enough to be around a team that picked up a Ray Bourque and a Rob Blake and won a Stanley Cup, and it worked. So I've seen it firsthand that you can get somebody who can make a huge impact this year. But it's not, it doesn't happen that often. Now the mold that everybody continues to talk about is 1980, when Butch Goring went from the Los Angeles Kings to the New York Islanders, and they subsequently, he won a Conn Smythe, and they subsequently won four cups in a row, and everybody always looks at, and there is no doubt that he made the difference, and they may not have won those cups without him, because he became the second line center. And that was it. They were off to the races. So that's the bar that's been set, right, 40 years ago. And it's very difficult to do that. And as I said, I did see it with Bourque and Blake. But I just think that it's so rare, Tom, and the player you get doesn't always make that impact. And the two biggest names this year were, as you mentioned, Fleury in Minnesota and Giroux in Florida, and it ended up neither, got past the second round. Fleury didn't get past the first. So, and then you look at, as you mentioned, Edmonton didn't do anything. They're battling now to try to get to the third round. So I don't know. I think the bottom line is there's too much hype and it's too rare when you're able to get a player that can really help you win a Stanley Cup these days.
Yeah. And on top of all that, Mike, you look at, you know, coming in, a lot of times the guys that are available are veterans on expiring contracts.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And
yeah.
So yeah. Those guys have a value, but they don't put a team that's a mid-pack team automatically to the top. They do put a team that is near the top over the top, in my opinion. So if you're Giroux, actually, I think did make more sense to go to the Avalanche. Not that they look like they need him right now, but because the Avalanche didn't need him to come in and be the guy. And honestly, neither did the Panthers. They have Barkov, they have Huberdeau. And by the way, those guys have not, I mean, it's impossible to say anybody had a good second round. Florida scored 3 goals in 4 games against Tampa Bay. But, you know, Giroux is not the type of player, at least I thought, that made the right difference for Florida. I applauded them going after him. I understood the thinking that you want a veteran guy on there, but you're inserting a veteran guy who's never won anything onto a younger team that hasn't won anything. I don't think that was a huge move in terms of the right type of impact. And that's the thing is we discount that winning. Just being able to be the last team standing and lift the cup at the end of an arduous run is worth a lot in experience because nothing goes perfect the whole way. You don't win 16 straight and call it good. You face adversity. So, you know, those are some of those younger teams that we've talked about. And Minnesota is a construction project. The fact that Minnesota did as well as they did this year, they picked up Fleury, they kind of did a few things that I was actually a little surprised because they're still a little ahead of schedule. If I'm a Wild fan, I have optimism for the future still. That's a team that Bill Guerin is still shaping and molding. And I like what he's doing there. But, man, I tell you what, just the urgency that we place on teams, well, you've got to do something. You must make a move or you're not serious about winning. Mm-hmm. Not true. Not true at all. And I think that that's the unfortunate pressure that is placed on GMs and ownership groups and everybody in an organization. If I go out and swing for the fences, hit a home run, bring in a big-time goal scorer, and he scores 8 goals in 4 games, but we still get swept, what have I done? You know, have I traded assets and core pieces that could have been viable for the team for 4 or 5 years for a win-now attitude? And I think that that's oftentimes the realism of the situation is overlooked because there's a need to appease. And so I think that that's what we see out of a lot of teams. They just feel this need to appease and make it look like they're doing something instead of staying patient. Teams used to stay patient a lot more than they do now, I think. Maybe that's rose-colored glasses, Mike. I don't know.
No. I agree with you. Because I think it's blown up so big. Two days are out of control now in the NHL. And money-wise, you have the free agent day, you know, in July, and you have trade deadline day. It's out of control in terms of the movement. You're trying, as you said, appease the fans. You're trying to appease players. The only people who aren't happy when you do something like that is the guy who's going to get less playing time,
right?
That's who you brought in, but the players on the team, I'm not kidding when I say they want to feel like you're doing something to improve the team, right? And,
yeah.
And there's a sense of you're just giving up. You don't think that we've got a chance because there's this feeling that comes around the league. Like you have to get the piece that's missing. You have to get that piece that takes you over the top that can take you to that next level. And when nothing gets done or very little tiny, there is almost a sense in the locker room. I've seen it where it's like, oh, well, they don't think we can win this year. So, you know, nothing big happened. And That's wrong. But it just has become, especially I've been in Canada on road trips on trade deadline day. I don't know if you ever had that happen to you. Oh my! The whole country stops. There's nobody working. Nobody works all day. It's just everybody's staring at their phone, were the computers or the TV all day. Was waiting to see what's going to happen. I'm telling you, it's a national holiday in Canada on trade deadline day. The whole country stops. It's too much. It's out of control, and it leads to too high expectations, too much pressure on some guys, and we're seeing this year the teams that are left, at least at this point, there had none of them. Are teams that have made gigantic trades that have players that are making a difference in the playoffs right now. I mean, you go through the list of the teams that are out already, and they're the ones that made trades. Now, to Minnesota's credit, they didn't give up a ton for Fleury. They didn't mortgage the future, I don't think, for Fleury, right? Because some of that was just based on how the team was going to finish up. And Florida a little bit with for Giroux. But it'll be interesting. And the other thing is, you'd be interested to see whether guys come back. It's one thing you make True. That deal. Does Fleury come back to Minnesota next year? Do they want him back next year? Giroux, I'm sure. What would it cost? What's going to cost Florida to have an aging veteran who did not do much for you in the playoffs and has never won anything? What's that worth for next year? You've given up assets to get him. Do you just let him walk? Or do you have to overpay him?
Yeah, that's the other thing too, Mike, that you bring up. Interesting point is, if the guy didn't really work out, how much what GMs should do every time, and they don't because there's egos involved. But what they should do every time is, if a player isn't working, you cut bait. You know, you let him go. You just say, look, it didn't work. Okay. That happens sometimes. Guys come in and they're just not the right thing you thought they'd be. But because there's ego involved, they're, well, I'm going to make this work, and we're going to make it work next season. So I am going to overpay this guy and, you know, show you that he was worth it. You know, somehow the dollar value on the contract makes it better, which it never does. But that is the reason why we see some of this. The only trades, and actually the guys who are still going that have done the most, are the Rangers. They brought in Kopp. They brought in Vetrano. They've both been scoring. Kopp is second on the team in goals right now. But what I like about the Rangers is their scoring has been spread out. Nobody said to Frankie Vetrano, you've got to be the guy. Nobody said to Kopp, you've got to be the guy. They had Kreider. They had Panarin. They had these guys already. So what did they do? They just strengthened themselves in an area where they wanted to be a little stronger. And at no point did they need these guys to put them over the top because they were mid-pack. No, they were already a very good scoring hockey team. The Rangers knew how to score goals. Now they just have more of it. And I think that those are the type of deals that you need to make at the deadline. Is, you know, even if you take a strength and make it stronger, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You might have said, oh, well, the Rangers could use another depth defenseman, or they could have used whatever. Just because they didn't address that need and maybe they did something else also doesn't make it the wrong move. That's the other thing, too, that I get tired of hearing. Well, what's this guy going to do? He's going to score goals. What's wrong with him coming in and scoring goals? Do you have a problem with winning? You know, just the whole game is based on having one more goal than the other guy. I don't know.
But when you say, and of all the teams, and maybe just because they're a Canadian team, I thought Edmonton took the biggest beating in the press for not doing anything.
Yeah.
And here they are, as we're taping this, they're up in their series in round two, and they didn't do anything. They did nothing. You and I talked about it on our Sunday night shows about, you know, they were hamstrung a little bit because of the salary cap and their goaltending situation, where, you know, anybody, I mean, you think, boy, that would have been a great place for Fleury to go. How about that? I wonder if Marc-Andre Fleury right now is thinking, that would have been a fun place to be right now. But yeah, you know, so I think of all the teams, especially up in Canada. I mean, you knew Montreal was unloading things. You know, Toronto got Giordano, that helped them. Ottawa's unloading. Calgary had already gotten Toffoli. They made their big move. Winnipeg was unloading. So Edmonton, a team that, again, with these stars right in their peak of their career, and they did nothing. They didn't do anything. But here they are. Here they are. They're a game away from going to the conference finals. So sometimes the, you know, it's best to best not to disrupt what you have. And the other thing is, I thought this year there wasn't a ton of really great players available. I mean, nobody took a chance on Kessel, which I was surprised at. I thought somebody, I mean, Arizona would have, you know, drove him to, you know, packed his stuff up and drove him to any town. When they would have loved to unloaded Kessel and get something, get a third round pick for him or something. I'm surprised that nobody even took a flyer on him. But you know what? Giroux was the best forward. Fleury's the best goaltender. Giordano probably the best defenseman available. But that was it. It wasn't a stellar year. And I know we'll save this for another podcast, but you know, next up now after the playoffs are done will be free agent day, and that's always that. I mean, that is just, it's insanity. And the big question this year is going to be what's going to happen with Malkin and Letang. And you know, there's been some interesting stories coming out of Pittsburgh. So we're getting some mixed messages. I mean, we can delve into this in another podcast, but after you have this trade deadline, which didn't have much impact on the playoffs, didn't change things really. The next thing is teams go on feeling that pressure. They've got to go out and sign people to change their teams. And how many times does that actually work? So, you know, that's next up for us.
I mean, the run-up now, the questions are already there. Teams without coaches. Barry Trotz is interviewing with everybody. And that, I feel like that's going to be the first domino to land, because that can dictate a lot, too. It depends how involved your coach is with his team building. Some places, sure, the coach is more involved than others. In some places, it's just the GM, this is my team, you're going to coach it. Some places, it's more collaborative. So, but once that shoe drops, or that skate drops, if you will, once he has a home, then I think we're going to see what happens from there. He's in the catbird seat. And again, he doesn't even have to coach next year. But Mike, judging by the fact he's already been on a couple of different interviews, I think he wants to be somewhere next year. He wants to be behind a bench. So I get that. And that will dictate a lot. The run-up here with RFAs, there's starting to be more talk about the potential for offer sheets. I don't know why offer sheets have such a bad rap. A restricted free agent is a means of being a free agent, and an offer sheet is something that was put into the CBA for a reason. Somehow, it has become akin to, well, if you sign a guy to an offer sheet, you've just stabbed that rival GM in the back.
Right, it's collusion. No, it's a collusion thing. You don't do it to us, we won't do it to you.
Yeah. And it doesn't make any sense to me. It's a tool in the toolbox if you so choose to use it. And I'm not saying you got to go out and sign guys to ridiculous deals. You could use it as a weapon. I suppose you could. But man, I don't see it. I mean, look at Carolina Montreal, right? The back and forth there over the offer sheeting and it really does. It causes problems between teams. So I don't know.
Well, because don't you think mostly what happens more than not is, you know, it's like the Shea Weber situation, right? A team will make that offer.
Oh, I was there for that.
And the other team, and then the team that already has him goes, you son of a, well, now we got to overpay this guy to keep him.
Yes. You know?
I really feel it's not the anger of, oh, you took our player. It's you're making us overpay. We have a budget. We're in a salary cap situation, and now we have to overpay him. And that effect, there's a domino effect. Now the bar is our this guy gets this amount. Everybody else goes, oh, everybody else's agent goes, oh, okay, that's now you got to pay my guy. It's a whole domino effect. That there's anger in that. Plus, you know, plus the other part of we drafted him, we groomed him, we, you know, got him to this point in his career. And then what you did. So I understand the anger from the GMs, And but there is that whole collusion of, look, you don't do it to us, we won't do it to you. Let's all agree we're not doing this, right? You get that feeling too.
Yeah.
But there's always that, there's always that general manager who doesn't play by the unwritten rule, and there's a lot of anger to them.
Yeah, it's it, and I guess it makes it all that much more interesting. But you know, leading up to this, if a guy wants to stay, if he wants to sign, he's going to. Some players have made up their mind to stay. Some have made up their mind to go. And you know, some teams don't like that. They don't like that they're being rejected by a player already. And it happens.
Yeah.
I mean, it's again, there's egos involved. You know, there's a lot of egos involved here. So it will be. It'll be interesting coming down the stretch into free agency and to see who gets re-signed, where the coaches land. But in the meantime, again, I think the trade deadline home run acquisitions just weren't there this year. And maybe some teams tried to stretch and make things a little unrealistic for themselves. Time for a quick break, then back with more of the Talking Puck Podcast in just a moment. You know, here at Talking Puck, we generate a lot of media on different platforms. Open Media's 4K download suite makes my life a lot easier, and it can help you too. Whether you need to download audio clips, convert streams to audio, which we do a lot of here, creating slideshows, or even need help with your social media accounts like Instagram and TikTok, there's something for everyone, from casual user to pro. Use our special link, bit.ly/4kpuck. That's bit.ly/4kpuck to receive a special discount of 25% off your purchase. That's bit.ly/4kpuck. Talking Puck is now on Signal to Noise Radio every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. Signal to Noise is one of the fastest growing internet radio stations, and now they have merch. Help spread the word about Signal to Noise Radio with t-shirts, stickers, keychains, and more. Shipping is direct and free. $25 gets you a t-shirt, while keychains and swag packs start at just $7. Order today at stnradio.com/merch. And thanks for your support. Now back to the show.
Do you we thought that Calgary made their big move to Foley. That was a pretty big move. That was a good move. We thought at the time,
sure,
for Calgary. You still think that was a good move by them? I mean, they got him early. They didn't have to overpay, I don't think, really, for him.
They and Toffoli, remember, is coming off a situation where with Montreal, they just made that deep run all the way to a cup final. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
he was good.
Yeah, he was. He was very good in that. He was instrumental, I dare say, in that run. And so, no, I don't think that 10 out of 10, I acquire Toffoli again. But if you're looking up and down the bench and going, why isn't Toffoli the guy leading this team in scoring? Because he never was going to be. He was not that guy. Now, can he be more of an emotional spark plug for the team? I don't know. I'm not in the room. Mm-hmm. But we haven't heard his name a lot in the series. And you'd like to, you know, see him go out and do something. But, Mike, I'm looking at Calgary, and I'm looking at other guys as reasons why they're not doing as well. And here's an interesting one. The goal scoring on Calgary, Elias Lindholm is the leading goal scorer. I did not see that coming. He's got 5 goals in 11 games. After that, you've got Tkachuk and Backlund at 4 each. And I have to keep sliding down this list of, oh, there's Johnny Gaudreau, 2 goals in 11 games, 13 points.
One a big one, though. One.
It was a big
series
one.
Series winning goal.
But he's got to score more than 2 goals.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that was a biggie, though. I'll give him that.
It was.
What about pull up the current roster and scoring for Tampa Bay? Here's a two-time defending champs. They had to unload some guys because of salary and also the expansion draft. What did they do at trade deadline, and what's been the impact on the Tampa Bay Lightning?
You know, it's the funny thing is, this is the weirdest thing to me, is that Ross Colton and Corey Perry have the most goals for this team in the playoffs.
Corey Perry.
Yep. And I'm not a Corey Perry fan. But again, you talk about these agitators and the straw that stirs the drink. And somehow Perry's got five goals, but that's not even really his value. That's not why they brought him in. They brought him in to be a veteran guy with a cup who can go in and be annoying and be a pest and be a leader, a veteran leader on this team. And he is,
but he's still one of the best around the net, though. He's one of the most annoying. You can't move him out of there. He's going to tip. He's going to get rebounds. I'll bet you the house that what has he got? Said five. None of them are from 2 feet out from the net.
You knock them all in with your shovel. That is something like you think of Stamkos, sniper, Kucherov. He's a playmaker, but he can shoot. But you don't think of these guys parked in front of the net banging home the trash, or tipping those pucks on the way in. They're the ones shooting the pucks to be tipped.
Right. Everybody has a role. And Corey Perry he did that with Dallas last year, too. When, he helped, Dallas, 2 years ago, Dallas get to the Stanley Cup Finals by just being right in front of the net. He was a pain. So, all right, at the trade deadline, who was the pickup for Tampa? Tampa didn't make any huge waves, did they?
I don't know. I don't think they did. I'm trying to recall, and actually, I'll have to see here.
I don't think so. Nothing simple, but their hands are tied a little bit. Their salary, they're right up against the cap, though, aren't they? They just don't.
Tampa is not against the cap, Mike. They are so far beyond the cap.
Well, they Kucherov'd you.
they did. I like how you turn that into a thing. No, absolutely. They are so, beyond the pale when it comes to the salary cap, but they found a way to juggle it and make it work. So what can you say to that? There are loopholes for a reason.
They lost guys. I mean, Johnson, they lost TM. They lost some other guys.
They picked up Nick Paul and Riley Nash. Those are their two big ones. And then they got Brandon Hagel was the other guy they brought in.
Oh, that's right. That's the big one from Chicago. Right. The Chicago deal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was a good trade for them.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was a good trade.
Hagel is 4 points in 11 games. He's a plus +3. All of his points have been at even strength. So, that's not a horrible thing. And he's, again, this is a team that didn't need a 50-goal scorer to come in the door. They didn't need a number one defenseman to come in the door. They didn't need a starting goalie to come in the door. They just needed to get solid, more solid, in the middle. And they did.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I remember that deal. Everybody thought that was a really good deal. And he's young, too. He's a guy that, you think there's going to continue to be turnover for Tampa Bay. And you don't want to be that team. And when you're winning, that all of a sudden, like the Chicago Blackhawks, you have nothing, you drop. You just drop like the elevator just, fell.
That Nick Paul trade looks pretty good for them too, though. Picking him up from Ottawa, they gave up Matthew Joseph in a 2024 fourth rounder, and he's chipped in. He's a half point a game guy, and he's another depth forward. Tampa Bay has just made smart moves.
They're good. They're the class of the league right now for sure,
for a reason.
Not only winning, they're smart. They do things well. Players want to stay. I mean, they don't. You know what they didn't have was guys. And maybe this was just smart the way that they got their contracts, Tom. But what they didn't have was after they won. I've seen this before. Teams win, and then players who are at the end of their contracts go, "This is my opportunity now to go get my. I'm leaving and go get the big bucks because I just won." And other teams want somebody who won a cup on their team, and they're going to pay for that. Tampa Bay didn't have that giant exodus off their team after they won. Even after the second win, they kept guys there. They were forced themselves to unload, but they didn't have guys just bailing to go get big contracts, did they?
No.
To their credit.
There's something to be said too. Like we talk about this on and off. Guys, by and large, want to play for John Cooper. Every time Tampa Bay hits a little bit of a lull, everybody goes, oh, John Cooper's going to keep his job. Of course he's going to keep his job. He's won the last two Stanley Cups. And now he might have them on their way to a third. It's going to take a lot. We're so, you know, like, oh, something's got to happen. You know, off with his head type of thing. It's like, no, I mean, I know I talked earlier about how organizations don't always stay patient, but Tampa has, and it's rewarded them. You know, they've grown this bunch together. Now they've grown it into two Stanley Cups, the possibility of a third. Who knows beyond that? I mean, this is the closest thing we're going to see to a modern day dynasty right now is what Tampa's doing.
Yeah, I personally didn't think that it's possible, but they have, you know, they fought back hard in that first round and looked great against Florida in the second. You know, there's still two more rounds to go if they want to achieve their goal, but it is a real tribute to them. They made. I mean, we started the podcast talking about the trade deadline, and they didn't have to make the big splash, but they made the smart move. They didn't get the Giroux. They didn't need a Fleury, but they didn't go and get Giroux. They got some guys. You said Paul Hagel. They got guys that fit in what they needed, filled the holes from four guys that they lost through having to trade or the expansion draft. It's just sort of like they refilled their spots. It was really, really smart. And it just shows you it's not always the big splash, the Giroux and the Fleurys, that are going to make the difference. While that certainly appeases the fans, gets you excited, that doesn't always translate into wins. It's just really knowing exactly what you need and fill in those holes. And that's easier to do when you've already won, because you know you've won. Now you know what you need. You're Florida, you don't know what you need, really. You haven't won it. You haven't won a first round. What, you haven't won first round since 96. So you don't know really what you need. And you go for the big splash and it didn't work. But I still have to give Florida a little bit of credit. They outdueled everybody else to get the number one forward on their team. And disappointingly, he didn't produce, especially in the second round. But it shows to me that Florida at least is willing to go for it. And I still think that's an up-and-coming team that's going to be a contender for the next 3 years.
I agree. A very good, young, up-and-coming team. But, man, the Rangers might be setting the bar a little bit higher right now. So,
yeah, I think those are the two. I don't know how much longer Tampa Bay can keep going, but maybe they can. But I think the two best teams in the NHL that are on the upswing are the Rangers and the Panthers.
Yep. Absolutely. I agree with that. And not taking anything away from the established teams, but it's nice to see the landscape change every once in a while, too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know, we'll see how it goes into free agency. Mike and I, believe me, we'll be with you all the way up through free agency, and we'll have things to say about it. Don't you worry. We will always have things to say about it. So, but that's but the cautionary tale, Mike, the trade deadline does not fix everything. Neither does free agency.
No. And right now, what I'll be interested in seeing, and we'll obviously delve much more deeper into this as time approaches, but I'll be fascinated to see what Pittsburgh decides they're doing. Are they going to be able to nail down Malkin, Letang? And then the biggest thing for me is, what is Chicago going to do? I mean, I know Kane's not going to be a free agent, but they may decide. Because you put it in, you have the free agency, you have the draft and the free agency, and it sort of overlaps a little bit as teams are adjusting. And if you're Chicago, while he's not a free agent, you go, look, we're not going to be contending for the next 5 years. We're just not. And we have our best players, Patrick Kane. Do we take him right now and get back as much as we can for him? And so that to me this summer will be the most interesting thing, besides what's happening in Pittsburgh. What is Chicago going to do with Patrick Kane?
Yeah, that'll be a big market driver, that's for sure, because obviously Kane will not come cheap. Mm-mm. So we'll see.
And he shouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah, we will see. And once you trade Patrick Kane, that team might have the chance to extend him. But probably not for that kind of money, but, you know, maybe something comfortable for him. So It'll be interesting. It's always interesting. It's always fun. And that's why we love doing this stuff. So it makes for a great podcast and a great show. Don't forget to check us out. We're live Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern time on Facebook Live. We are on Twitch TV, and we're also on YouTube. We stream live 9 p.m. Eastern. And then, of course, the podcast dropping weekly. If you like what you hear, please like, follow, and subscribe. Click the bell. You get the notifications when the show goes live on Sunday nights. So, good one for now, and we have certainly more to say. We've got the conference finals coming up in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll be covering those wall-to-wall for you as well. So for Mike, I'm Tom. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you next time.